I have somewhat of a news flash, I guess, for you tonight related to our study, related to our passage. I trust that you are sitting down. Okay, look around. You are. I trust that you're ready and you've got a pen and some paper there because you're going to want to write what I'm about to say down. The news flash is this. Each of us is getting older. Okay? That's it. Each of us is getting older. I said it. I know that's shocking. I know that that's a hard thing to hear. But we must know the truth. We must deal with the truth. And the truth is that each day that goes by, you and I are one day older. And one day closer to death. Now, there's a complicating tangential thought here to this. We're not just getting older each day, but overall, each of us as a group and as a people in our nation, we are living longer. Just so you'll know, the average lifespan in 1900, so at the turn of the century, 1900, over 100 years ago now, the average lifespan was only about 47 years. In 1940, 40 years past that, the average lifespan was about 63 years. Today, look this up today, the average life expectancy is approximately 77 years. Although, and this has always been true, there's a discrepancy between males and females. Each one of those figures I gave you, that discrepancy exists. Today, the average life expectancy for men is about 73.6 years, and for women is 79.4 years. So it averages there to about 77. Ethnicity enters into these figures as well. So this is just an across-the-board kind of analysis that I'm giving you. And as you can see, the average, what we would expect to live as an average life is increasing, you know, every few decades. And that means that whatever we think old age is, it's arriving later than ever before now. Just so you'll know, in 1900, only 4% of the population was over 65. The average lifespan was about 47 years, but about 4% of the population was over 65. Today, about 12% of the population is over 65. That's three times that of just a little over 100 plus years ago. You might be interested in knowing this, that today there are 12,000 people in America that are over the age of 100. 12,000. That's a lot. So we're living longer. Each day we live, we get one day older, and we're living longer. And some may think that because we're living longer, we're automatically living a more resourceful and meaningful life, that overall people are happier because we're living longer. But sadly, that's not the case. Many of you have heard of Charles Swindoll. He noted these four feelings in most seniors, in many seniors, probably I should say, as they age, get older, many sense the feeling of uselessness. So instead of fulfillment and enjoying life that we're having by living longer, the elderly often think that they're just in the way. They're a bother. They're useless. They're over the hill. We have those expressions. Thoughts like that are common, especially among those who were once considered very resourceful people based upon the position they had, the job they had. I mean, in the past, perhaps they were the ones whose opinions were considered the most important. They were looked upon for leadership and direction in their generation, but now that's no longer happening. So they kind of feel useless. He points out that many suffer from feelings of guilt as they look over their life. So instead of enjoying these extra years, they're thinking as they look back that somehow they've fouled things up, that they blew it. And so they think things like this: if I could just live my life over again, I'd do a lot of things differently. I'd rear my children differently. I'd be in a different job. I would pursue a line of work that I would have enjoyed. I would have handled my money differently. I would have taken more vacations. I would have enjoyed leisure more. I would have become more responsible. just in general, their thoughts are, I'm not the person I could have been. Some suffer from feelings of bitterness and resentment. They look back on their lives and they think they were given a raw deal. That resentment is usually connected to a person. You know, it's aimed at a person. If I just married another person, I would have had a more productive life. If my children were different, if they had been more thoughtful and respectful. And so with this bitterness and resentment, there's this self-pity that gets mixed in. If I could have had it easier in life, it would have been better. I was given a raw deal. My life was hard. I had it rough. So now they're resentful. They're bitter. And lastly, he says that some struggle with feelings of fear. And the reality is that as people age, of course, they face many fears. There's the fears of ill health, or the fear of bankruptcy, or the fear of dying, of being left alone, of losing one's mind, and a dozen other fears that are real. I mean, it is true, the world is not easy for those who are aging, for seniors, many of them. We have a very fast-paced electronic age. You know, everything's computerized, computerized banking. There's emails, laptops, you know, digital cameras, Palm Pilots, you know, Blackberries. It's easy to get intimidated by all this, confused, the older people get, especially as they approach the end of their lives. It's not to mention, you know, the busyness of life in traffic, you know, busy intersections and what to do at that intersection with fast-moving traffic. You ought to see them drive on the freeways of L.A. It's an amazing thing to watch. I mean, growing older is just not fun. If you find that you're not able to keep up, if you find that living in this world is a threatening kind of existence, that things are moving too fast, it's not fun if you're surrounded by people who don't care, who are not patient with you. You've had friends that are gone, maybe close loved ones that have died. Maybe you've outlived children. I've heard more than one in their 80s and 90s, you know, who are at the funeral of a child and saying it's not supposed to be this way. You know, it's supposed to be the other way. But that's reality. That's life. So how are we to look at aging? How are we to look at our life? And if you're young, whatever that means, all of us here tonight, how are you to look ahead at life and aging? As on all subjects, we need to know what God says. We need to have a divine perspective on growing older. And that's what we find in chapter 12 of Ecclesiastes. We have come to the last chapter of this journal, Solomon's journal, the final moments of what he wants to say. And so now in chapter 12, he states very clearly the importance of living your life, listening to God, focused on God, walking with the Lord. And even though we have found moments of cynicism, especially in the first part of this journal, there's no cynicism here. It's actually absent and conspicuous by its absence. The bottom line of his message in chapter 12 is found in verse 1. Remember also your Creator in the days of your youth, before the evil days come and the years draw near when you will say, I have no delight in them. Again, there are a lot of people who are aged now who struggle with those feelings of uselessness and fear and resentment and bitterness, confusion, etc., disappointment. Solomon has some advice for us. Remember your Creator before the evil days come. Just so you'll know before we dig into the first 7 or 8 verses here tonight, the word creator here is actually plural in Hebrew. It's a plural word. That's a Hebrew way of expressing something. It does a couple of different things. When you put God's name or something in reference to God in plural form, you're expressing the greatness of His majesty. That's one thing that accomplishes. But it's also an expression of the plural makeup of the Godhead. You know, just like in Genesis where God said, let us make man in our image. He's presented as plural. Why? There's three persons of the Godhead. So here, creator is actually a plural word. And this majestic, glorious, Trinitarian God, Solomon exhorts us to remember. We've seen the word remember back in chapter 11. And when Solomon says remember your Creator, he's talking about more than just something mental going on. He's not just simply recalling God every once in a while. It's not simple recall. This Hebrew term means to act decisively on behalf of someone else. You've pondered something, you've thought about something, and then you choose to act decisively on behalf of someone else. It's found in 1 Samuel chapter 1. It says there about Hannah, that God remembered Hannah. 1 Samuel chapter 1, verse 19. What does it mean that God remembered Hannah? Does it mean that he was in heaven and all of a sudden he thought, oh my goodness, Hannah, I forgot about her? No, it doesn't mean simple recall. He did more than just remember that she existed. When it says in 1 Samuel 1:19 that he remembered her, he acted decisively on her behalf. She was barren. And because God acted decisively on her behalf, she conceived a child. So for us, this term means that we are to reflect on God. We are to ponder who God is. We're to ponder the work of God. We're to think about him, Solomon is saying. We're to ponder who he is, what he's done, and we are to act decisively on his behalf in some way. And he says to do it while you're young. Now, he didn't tell us what young is here. But he says to do this while you're young. So to remember God is not just some mental act, you know, unthinking, purely mental sort of cognizance. It's something more drastic than that. It's to ponder life and God and then to make this decision that I'm going to cease from living this self-sufficient life, focused on myself, and I'm going to commit myself totally to him. Solomon says, do it. Do it while you're young. The point is, ideally, that's when you'll do it, while you still potentially have many, many years to give to the Lord. What wise counsel this is for youth. Now, the flesh is not going to like this. And the flesh, especially when you're young, speaks back to you about this. It speaks very loudly to you, to young people. It says, okay, don't take this too seriously. I mean, what's the rush? You've got lots of time. Lots of time. I mean, you need to take some years here. Maybe 30, 40 years. Wait till you've had 30 or 40 years of really enjoying life. I mean, sow your wild oats. And then, 30, 40 years of that, then get serious about God, turn your life over to him. Then you've got the best of both worlds, see? You've had your fun in the world, and then you get God at the end. That's kind of the way the flesh thinks. Solomon's saying, no. Listen, life is short. Before you know it, the days of your youth are going to be past. Each day you're living, you're one day older. And this increasing age is going to bring some decline in some ways, and it's going to affect your life. So the point is that if the right decision isn't made before some sad days come, or if the response to God is not timely, you may never make it. You may never make it at all. And the word evil here is not meaning morally evil. He says before the evil days come, it's a word that means distressing days. Days that have calamity built into them. So the idea of evil days and remembering God before the evil days come is there are going to be days in your life in the future when your body's strength is going to diminish. Your mental capacities are going to start to fail. And so the potential for service to God is going to diminish significantly. The days of youth are going to be past. So he's saying, if you delay, you may never make it. Now keep in mind something. We've already seen in previous chapters that he has said very clearly to us, get out there and enjoy life. Okay, have fun. Life is to be full of enjoyment. You're to take life by the throat and live it fully and joyfully. So this exhortation is not meant to pour water on that wonderful fire, you know. It's not a contradiction to the exhortations to rejoice. Instead, he's just presenting another important aspect to keep in mind. That if God is neglected in that pursuit of life and in that pursuit of joy, then you won't find joy. The capacity for finding joy is going to be lost. So this is a warning. It's a warning against mindless sort of recklessness and self-indulgence in the pursuit of enjoying life, especially while you're young. To forget the Creator when you're young is to invite something later on. It's to invite regrets. It's to invite bitter regrets. It's to invite an empty existence in old age. If you invest in foolishness all those days of your youth, you're going to get a dividend paid from your investment. It's going to be consequences, scars, bad habits you've developed. I mean, we're like that, and we end up being affected by it. We drag tons of heartaches related to our past. We drag it into our old age present. So we don't mature the way we could have, and our spiritual progress is dulled. Solomon's saying, don't do that. You know what he's really saying? He says, take it from experience. I've tried it. It's an empty journey to pursue enjoying life that way. So through Solomon, the Holy Spirit is graciously warning young people here, while we're young, it's easy to think we're going to be young forever, but we won't. We're growing older. We're living longer. So we need to heed this advice. Now let's go through the remainder of this section. It's a very famous section of Ecclesiastes. And we find poetic metaphors here that describe the reality of what it means to grow older. It's the reality, unfortunately, of progressive deterioration. It's a reminder of us of what happens the older we get. And again, the point is that we need to come to grip with this reality, ideally while we are young. When we age, we're going to experience, first of all, a growing amount of mental deterioration. First thing he mentions is mental deterioration, verse 2. You're thinking, I didn't come here to be discouraged tonight. You're supposed to encourage me. Verse 2. Remember God before the sun, the light, the moon, and the stars are darkened and the clouds return after the rain. That is a description, a poetic description of mental aging, mental dullness. Now, normally, after a rain, you have clouds during the rain, but after the rain's gone, the sky clears and you've got clear skies. But in this scene that he's painting, for this person, the rain doesn't end. The clouds don't go away. The clouds stay and they get thicker as each year goes by. The clear sky doesn't reappear. One heavy cloud comes after another and then another. So this cloudy weather is representing the aging mind as it begins to get more dull as years go by, to the point that literally senility can set in and steal the joy of living. So we start experiencing things like this gradually. Failure of our memory. A failure in our understanding of things. Over time, there's a diminishing in the capabilities of our will and being able to choose. There's a dulling of our affections. There's a dulling of our imaginations. One mental infirmity after another begins to hamper our effectiveness in serving the Creator the way we desire to. So I know, you and I both know, I mean, all of us here know tonight that someday the clouds are going to get thicker. And they're going to gather more and more. I frequently, in my life, even now, some of you would say this, you sense that every once in a while. The clouds. So we're advised here to get moving, to doing something. Remember your Creator while you can. See? Do whatever's necessary to ponder, to think about, and to act decisively in serving God while you can. While those evil days of mental deterioration have not completely overtaken us yet. Because a lot of times it happens gradually. Every 10 years that go by, maybe a few more clouds. A little less memory. A little more diminishing in our capabilities mentally. So the first thing he points out is what to expect as we age is mental deterioration. Verse 2. In the last few verses, verses number 2, he points out and describes the reality of physical deterioration. We're going to suffer mental deterioration and we're going to suffer physical deterioration. accompanying the advancement of years are bodily ailments, physical limitations, physical infirmities. Verse 3. In the day that the watchmen of the house tremble. Now that's referring, metaphorically and poetically, to our arms and our hands. Those are the watchmen of the house. As we age, he says, they tremble. And that's true. They can begin shaking more and more with feebleness. And along with this is possibly even the related idea of our head and our voice trembling as well as we age. But primarily, the watchman of the house in Hebrew here is a poetic way of referring to our arms and our hands. The mighty men, he says, stoop. What's that referring to? Well, it's almost like he's describing a house here, the house of our body. And our house is built upon two pillars, two strong pillars, our legs. It's referring to our legs, the mighty men. Even these mighty men are going to get feeble at some point. There's going to be stooping at some point because of them. I mean, think about it. I can understand this. I used to jump, leap, run. Now, I mean, I got to think twice about that before I make a move like that. Okay. I used to run track. I was a speedster. I was the one they turned to for the 100-meter dashes and the 400-meter relays and things like that. Jim will relate to this because he remembers it. When I first moved here, started in October, that November, had a football game. Remember that? I'm still sore from it, yeah. That was a year and a half ago. Thanksgiving over, not the last one, but the one before that. So Matt talked us into going to play the annual Turkey Bowl. Gratefully, they didn't have it this last November that I'm aware of. Maybe they just didn't tell us. So I went. And I ran like crazy. And we suffered for days and days after that. Had a church softball team this last year. And I was still pretty fast, actually, in some ways. But boy, I paid for that. After every game. I mean, our mighty men, the legs, they're it's like the old song that my mother used to sing to me when I was little. The old gray mare, what's the rest of it? She ain't what she used to be, you know. Her legs, they ain't what they used to be. The grinding ones stand idle because they are few. Pretty obvious what he's talking about there. Our teeth. We lose the ability to chew, to masticate food, you know, because we lose teeth. I mean, it takes longer to eat, I guess, because you've got to line up the pieces of food with the tooth you have left, you know, teeth you have left, and make them fit somehow. A dentist might say it this way, you know, your uppers and your lowers don't meet very well. The older we get, the more we have to potentially gum our food, I suppose, if we lose enough teeth. Gratefully, we live in a day where we can have a lot of fake ones. Had four put in yesterday, Tuesday. But he's saying, this is the reality. We're going to deteriorate. Our grinders, the teeth, they're going to stand idle because they're few. And those who look through windows grow dim. It's not hard to figure out this metaphor. It's referring to our eyes, the windows of our eyes. They grow dim. As we get older, our eyes begin to lose their sight. Pupils become less dilated, more contracted. Our focus is not as crisp. We have to get lenses, then more lenses, two, and then three, maybe thicker ones at some point. I mean, go observe an ophthalmologist's office. Observe the ones going in and out. Average what you think the ages are. You're going to find primarily the bulk of patients are in the older decades. There's the problem with cataracts that can develop that brings a concern for blindness and glaucoma, which is serious. It's the way it is. Those who look through the windows grow dim. Verse 4, and the doors on the street are shut as the sound of the grinding mill is low. It's our ears. It's a reference to our hearing. The doors to the outside world, you know, it's what we hear. And he says the ground, the grinding of, is low. We don't hear like we once did, to the point we can't even hear our own chewing, you know, inside our own mouth. We don't hear that anymore, is the point he's making. Maybe that's made more real by the fact that we're eating more soft food, so we're not making any noise when we chew. But since our doors are shutting anyway, he says, we find ourselves missing out on a lot. We find ourselves missing out on a lot that's said. We lose that ability to distinguish fine sounds and speaking. Pam and I talked about that more than once, especially if we go to some place like a restaurant where there's a lot of talking going on. We have more trouble now distinguishing what's being said even at our table. As we grow older, there's more lines in our vocabulary like, I'm sorry, what? I'm sorry, what'd you say? And special sounds we once enjoyed, maybe delicate sounds in music, we now miss. The next metaphor. And one will arise at the sound of the bird. It's an interesting note of irony here. We hear less and we're disturbed more easily in our sleep. Maybe we used to be able to sleep through the night, you know, with a roaring train going by outside the window. No longer. We wake up easily, wake up more often, have a harder time going back to sleep. And all the daughters of song will sing softly. It's a very difficult phrase to understand, actually, the translation. But most likely he's meaning that we're unable to sing as we once could sing. And that's true. Our voice changes. The old pipes, they're not as clear as they used to be. They're not as on key. That's true even of respected and seasoned professionals. I mean, it's actually kind of sad every once in a while when you hear someone saying that. Used to be very, you know, very good, very popular, a lot of hits, you know, all that kind of stuff. And maybe they're in their 60s and 70s and now, and they bring them out, you know, for a special song or whatever. And, you're glad to see them again. And it's not the same as it used to be. I mean, I've noticed that about my own voice. My voice is not as strong as it used to be. I don't have the range I used to have. Even 4 and 5 years ago, my range was greater. That's the way it is with aging, he says. Verse 5. Furthermore, men are afraid of a high place and of terrors on the road. Interesting statement. The point is, it's common for people, as they grow older, to have an increased awareness of danger of things. And it seems very, very acute. The older you get, the more overprotective you become. Because you're increasingly preoccupied with possible dangers. Maybe it's because you've just seen things happen more and more. But it's more than that. We're less sure of ourselves now. And we see other people, like our children or grandchildren, taking chances that we probably took too, and we're fine. But now we're less sure of ourselves. And so we get a little concerned. I mean, there might have been a time where we were willing to climb up a tree, throw caution to the wind, and onto the roof off of some precarious ladder. But now, well, we face a 1 foot step downward, you know, and we kind of stand there looking at it, trying to figure out how we're going to negotiate it in the safest way, you know. I mean, we just don't work like we used to. And I don't know how it is for you, but boy, when I see a small child jump off of something 3 or 4 feet tall, like maybe even this step right here, and they hit the floor with their feet, I just cringe. Because I know what that would do with me if I did it. I mean, it jars everything within me now. And he says that there's terrors on the road, and the idea is that even paths that we're familiar with, maybe it's just the hallway in our house, even that is something we find ourselves start to stumble in sometimes as we get older. Paths we were familiar with. The almond tree blossoms. Referring to our hair. The almond tree turns a light color as the blooms progress. In some species, even a silver gray color is what the blossoms turn to. It's obviously painting a word picture of graying hair. There was someone that visited our church even about 2 Sundays ago that knew me at Grace Community Church in California. I really didn't know them, but they knew who I was. In the years they were there. And I asked him, I said, "And so you know who I am?" He said, "Oh, yeah, I know who you are." I said, "But you've gotten older since you left. You got more gray hair." I said, "Thank you, I think." He rushed to say, "But that means wisdom, more wisdom. You've gotten wiser, I'm sure." It's okay, thank you. The grasshopper drags himself along. I mean, a grasshopper, you know, is able to jump when he's normal, but if his leg is injured and all that kind of stuff, he just sort of drags himself along in a halting gait. And that's what it's referring to, the halting gait of the elderly. Maybe even as they're walking with their canes now, you know, it's just not smooth. You just kind of drag yourself along. And overall, it definitely takes longer to get to where you're going now than it used to. Every once in a while, you know, I'm getting older, but still, I walk fast compared to some. So I go to JCPenney, and there'll be a couple people in the aisle, you know, kind of going really, really slow. And I'm trying to get around them, negotiate, you know, and you just can't get around them. They're just taking their time and walking very, very slowly. And when I'm with my family and my kids, I'll always punch them and I'll say, "Kids, a couple more years, that's going to be me. Get used to it. We're going to get there, but it's just going to take a little longer. We're like the injured grasshopper that drags ourselves along." And the caperberry is ineffective. And you may have it translated differently there, and there's a reason for that. It's a very difficult phrase to translate, but most likely it's referring to the inability to bear fruit, or that's metaphorically, but it's the inability to procreate. It's not just the ability that diminishes, but sexual desire does as well. The caperberry is actually a Hebrew word that evidently it was a reference to some sort of plant that had potential aphrodisiac properties. And because of that, several translations, I looked up several, they go ahead and translate it this way, desire fails. So your translation may say that, desire fails. And the point is, likely, the sexual desire decreases. Ability decreases. For man, then he wraps that up and he says, "For man goes to his eternal home while mourners go about in the street." So the point is that all these realities that we just went through, all those realities, and there's even a bit of a progression in the order of how they happen in some sense. Potentially. The point is that all these realities are just moving us towards something. The natural end of things. We die. The word for man is Adam. Adam. That's the Hebrew word for man. Adam. Adam goes to his eternal home. He goes to his eternal home and mourners gather in the street and they mourn. Nothing metaphorical in that statement. All these other metaphors are there. This one, there's no metaphor. It's to be interpreted literally. You go to eternal home and mourners mourn you. Verse 6. So he says it again. So remember him. Understand that all this is true. Remember him before the silver cord is broken and the golden bowl is crushed, the pitcher by the well is shattered, and the wheel of the cistern is crushed. All that together, those phrases, I'll give you some suggested possible interpretations of what they mean, and most scholars actually agree on it, but overall, they just sort of go together to point the picture of death. That life, the spring of life, is over. The things that connect you with life are done. Possibly the silver cord is this idea of a cord that connects you to life. Some have even said that it refers to your central nervous system, like your spinal cord. And the golden bowl may even refer to your brain. The pitcher by the well is shattered. That very possibly refers to your heart and heart failure. The wheel at the cistern is crushed. Possibly refers to the collapse of the circulatory system as the heart fails. But the overall point, whether or not he had those particular things in mind, and there's a good case to make that he did, the overall point is that we are going to fail physically. And we're going to die. What's valuable about life, silver and gold kind of functions, bodily functions that keep you alive, it's going to be crushed. And the pieces, it says shattered. And once this happens, the pieces can't be put back together again. All the king's horses and all the king's men. See, can't put you back together again. Once the shattering happens, life that could be found in the spring of water that you could dip into, no, the pitcher's crushed now. It's over. Verse 7, then the dust will return to the earth as it was, and the spirit will return to God who gave it. Where dust there is emphasizing our earthly origin, reminds us where we came from. To return to dust is now the reversal of Genesis 2, verse 7. In Genesis 2, verse 7, God made us out of the earth. And so this is the reversal of that. And what's interesting is Psalm 90. Psalm 90, Moses, who wrote that psalm, says it this way. When God says, return to dust, O man, then to dust you go. It doesn't happen before he says it, and you don't live a second, millisecond, nanosecond after he says it. Psalm 90 presents it that God has it determined. It's his sovereign choice. He knows when it is, and he speaks, and he says, return to dust. And when he says it to you, that's what happens. You die. And then you become a corpse, and now it experiences even further deterioration, more deterioration than what we just talked about that you experience while you live. It's even worse. And your spirit, the spirit will return to God who gave it. That's actually what death is. It's when the spirit and the body are separated. In this world, in this life, we live holistically. We live together. The inner man and the outer man. You can't really hardly separate them. They're not really separated. But at death, that's what happens. The physical and the metaphysical are separated. The physical returns to dust. The metaphysical, the spirit, leaves the earth. And we are actually and personally and consciously present with God at that moment. Our spirit returns to the Lord, the one who gave it. You definitely don't hear it spoken of that way on the evening news. You know, somebody dies. You don't read it in Time or Newsweek or tomorrow's morning newspaper that someone died and so their body is returning to dust and their spirit is returning to God who gave it. But take it from the Lord here. He wrote this through Solomon. This is what will happen. Now, you may live a bit longer than someone else and all those lifespan kind of figures I gave you. You may go past the 77. You may go way past the 77. You may add to that number of the 12,000 that live to be over 100. All that means is you're just living a bit longer than someone else. You're still going to die. Okay. Now, if the journal just stops there, it is kind of depressing. It's kind of a grim picture. A bleak future. If all we had to look forward to is gray hair and our mind diminishing and forgetting everything and we can't jump or run and our teeth fall out. I mean, but there is more. There is much more. There's something to smile about, even if we do it with some missing teeth. What allows us, even in old age, to still enjoy life is if, ideally, we have remembered the Creator when we were young, when we could. If we acted decisively on His behalf then. It's amazing what He does with all those feelings of guilt and self-pity and uselessness and fear and things like that. If we have decided actively on His behalf, if we remembered our Creator when we had the mental and physical capabilities of doing it, then you know what can happen in our relationship to Christ as we age? Even though these other things are happening, our relationship with Christ can grow sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. Our hair gets more gray and more gray and more gray. We have fewer and fewer teeth, thicker and thicker lenses. And our relationship with Christ can be sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. That's what makes life meaningful. As we grow older, spiritual things can actually become more and more significant to us. The Word of God becomes richer and richer and richer to us. And death, what about that? It still waits, yes. But as we grow in our relationship with Christ and our love for truth, we begin to realize more and more than death is just a door. It simply allows us entrance into what our heart has grown to love more and more anyway, and that's eternity with Christ. Life ends as some sort of majestic graduation then. It's a commencement service, death is, into what our real existence is all about, what we've been prepared for. Where we face the Lord first time and we hear Him say things that are unbelievable. Maybe in this world, the doors were growing shut and we were starting to hear less and less and less. But in that moment, hearing is going to be perfect. We're going to hear something we've never heard before. We're going to hear the Lord say, come, come into my kingdom. You'll hear sounds in heaven you never heard on earth. I mean, not even the aging process is going to cancel out His plan to make you into this new person with a glorified body that's fitted for eternity then to praise the Lord forever. So we're not really living unless we are ready to die, unless we understand the aging process and realize, you know what, while I have mental capabilities, while I'm able to do it, remember God. Remember your Creator. And this kind of thinking ought to be developed when you're young. I mean, think about it. The younger you are in this scale, and see, it's all relative. You know, the younger you are on the scale tonight, the more years you have to potentially enjoy your walk with Christ. The more years you have for a walk with the Lord to grow sweeter and sweeter. If you don't remember your Creator while you can, then read on verse 8. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. See, it means nothing if we don't remember Him. And it's interesting, that brings us all the way back to the very first words of this journal. That's how he started. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. Now he's back on that because he's been writing about decay and death. That brings him back to those opening words. All this makes man's future very perilous if he doesn't at some point in his life remember his Creator. Solomon did come to that point. He remembered his Creator while he could. Yes, it would have been better if he had remembered it even before that, when he was even younger. So though we are to seek to enjoy life, it doesn't mean that life is not going to have difficulties. It is a challenge. It is tough. We do experience sickness and terminal illness, and life is full of brokenness. It's full of broken hearts and broken marriages and broken relationships. For some people, there's not enough food. Life has moments of discouragement, depression, times of bewilderment, uncertainty. That's the reality of life. The Bible doesn't hide this from us, by the way. The Bible is very honest and very realistic for us. And everything just leads toward progressive deterioration and disappointment in some way. It's hard to imagine then, how can anyone handle that apart from relationship with Christ? How can you process that? How can you live with hope if you don't know Christ? Solomon's point is clear. Remember God now. There's going to come a day when each one of us here tonight are going to have less mental acuity, less physical ability, more mental slowness, more physical infirmity. And you know what? It's the way God planned it. He planned it that way. So come to terms with it now. Face the fact that you're not getting any younger. Deal with where you really are. What's your real age? You know, aging is a reality of life. And understand that God designed it this way. He even designed you to be empty without Him. He designed life to be boring without Him. He planned you to be restless if you don't know Him. Augustine has those famous words. We quote him sometimes. Some do. Augustine wrote this: Thou hast made us for Thyself, and our heart is restless until it rests in Thee. God made life this way, to be empty and unfulfilling. Why? So that we would discover that joy only comes by following what His Word says. It only comes in remembering Him. It doesn't come from human counsel. He made us be empty without Him. So now's the time to remember Him. You know, we prepare for retirement. That's great. It's wise. It's important. But have we prepared for life beyond that? We don't have to fear anything because we're growing older. If our faith is firmly fixed on Him, we can count on Him, like I said, waiting at the end for us, waiting up for us. Our room's going to be all ready. The light's on. We're expected. And He'll welcome us home. So again, ideally, it's a warning to the young. But there's something here that applies to each one of us who are older tonight. Like I said, though ideally we should embrace the advice while we're young, it's never too late to do what is right. If God has still allowed you mental capability at all, it's not too late to do what is right. If you understood what I said tonight, okay, you got enough left. Okay? There's enough left. If you understood the truth of this passage, you are obviously not so far down the path that you can't make choices to obey the Lord and please Him and remember Him. Just the fact that you're here tonight in this service, or you're listening to a download or a podcast of this message, then obviously you still have enough on the ball to be able to commit to living passionately for the Lord with whatever time you have left. If it's 1 year, 10 years, 50 years. So heed the exhortation to wherever you are in life. Remember your Creator. If you're young or old, doesn't matter. If you're savvy enough to any extent at all, perhaps it's just a prayer like this. Lord, I do want to remember You. I want to remember You each day I live. I commit myself to You. You are my Creator. That's the name for God that He chose here to use. He created us. He knows what's best for me. God, You know what's best for me. I willingly adapt my life to Your plan. Whatever stage I'm in, I willingly adapt my life to Your plan for my life right now. Whatever You want for me is what I want. Wherever I am in this process of deterioration, I accept what You have for me. Your will is what I want. I'm ready to go Your way. Let's pray. Father, we thank You that Your Word is not soft-peddling anything to us and sugar-coating something. It deals with life as it really is, and we've seen a dose of that tonight. Many of us in this room have experienced the realities of some of this deterioration. There's others here tonight that have tasted nothing of that, that they're aware of. With potentially a full life, we don't know how many years, but potentially many, many decades facing them. I pray especially for those who are at the younger end of the spectrum here tonight. I pray that You would so convict their heart that they would be so gripped by this, just verse 1 alone, that they would act decisively on Your behalf and totally, without reservation, commit themselves to submitting to Your plan for their life, embracing Your will, loving Your will for them. I pray that You would bring to that place of remembering their Creator. For those of us who are further down, Lord, perhaps with fewer years to go, Lord, You've given us enough understanding, enough acuity, enough ability to understand that where we are right now, we are to remember You and embrace Your will for us, whatever it is You have left, so that our remaining years are useful and that we're living passionately for Christ. We commit ourselves to this tonight. In Christ's name, amen.